presentation today is from the 2006 Mortimer Spiegelman Award winner, Professor Francesca Domenici. She received her PhD from the University of Padova in Italy, and her expertise is in statistical methods for analysis of health effects of air pollution and other environmental exposures, including health-related impacts of climate change, which she's going to speak to us about today. Her expertise is really in longitudinal data analysis, confounding, making causal conclusions, and Bayesian modeling. She's received extensive funding from NIH, from EPA, and from the Health Effects Institute for research. She's professor of biostatistics at Harvard, where she recently accepted a new role as senior associate dean for research. She served on numerous very important national and international advisory committees, and we're happy to have her here today.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, I hope you can hear me. I'm recovering from a terrible cold. So actually that means I'm going to be slower than I usually am. So in the next 20 minutes, I'm going to give you an overview and probably 1,000 feet view of how to think about statistical methodology and combining information from larger heterogeneous data to assess the public health impact of air pollution and climate change. So I'll briefly introduce the Clean Air Act, think about national data sets, very briefly mentioning air pollution health, and I want to focus most of the time on thinking about how you can address a question related to climate change, heat waves, and health. So the Clean Air Act is actually, it's a really nice example, and I would say one of these wonderful opportunity for public health researcher and actually statistician and epidemiology to directly impact policy. Because the Clean Air Act is one of the most important laws for protecting public health and the environment in the United States, and the Clean Air Act requires the EPA administrator to set national ambient quality standard for pollutants from which air quality criteria are listed. And so, as a result of that, the EPA has the mandate, the Environmental Protection Agency has the mandate to review the evidence, the current evidence, as whether or not ambient level of air pollution are harmful to public health. And if there are, the EPA has the mandate to further lower the standards. And so the regulatory process that is associated with air pollution actually clearly called for the role of statistician and epidemiologist to combine. I don't want to make Xiong sick as well. So the regulatory process is a very specific process where there is a Clean Air Act, national ambient air quality standards are set. Each county is requested, as whether or not they are in attainment with the national ambient air quality standard. If they're not, they have to develop a plan of how they're going to lower the standard. The interesting part, I want to say, is this red box called air pollution epidemiology that is the role of statistician and epidemiologists to gather the best possible data they have to respond as whether or not ambient level of particulate matter or other pollutants are still harmful to public health. From the summary of the epidemiological evidence, there is an EPA integrated risk assessment, and then national ambient air quality standard might be remain as they are, or they need to be lower in a case, as currently has been found, ambient level of pollution are still harmful. So how do we contribute to this circle? Well, one way to contribute is in the era now, okay, it fits with the other two talks of big data, of integrating large heterogeneous data sources and then developing statistical approaches to analyze this data, so then we can provide very robust evidence as whether or not ambient level of pollution are harmful. So just to give an example, this was one of the study that is called the National Morbidity, Mortality, and Pollution Study, that basically within each of the 100 locations in the United States, we developed statistical approaches to investigate as whether day-to-day changes in particulate matter were associated with day-to-day changes in number of deaths. The other big data set, which is now more recent, and we're continuing to work on. It's the National Medicare Cohort Study, where basically we take billing claims from everyone in the United States enrolled in Medicare. So it's the billing claim for pretty much the entire population of elderly, and we follow them over time for over 10 years. For each of these individuals, we know the date of service, we know the disease, we know the age, gender, and race. It's very important we know their place of residence. The place of residence is very important because then we can link their health experience to the closest monitor station that measure ambient level of pollution. So I'm not going to go into all the details of how we produce the evidence, how we do the estimation, but very briefly, the idea is that in the context of time series study, within each location, and we have several hundred locations in the United States, we have a time series of the daily number of cardiovascular admissions, for example, and the daily levels of PM of the particulate matter. And what we do, we build a Poisson regression model that tries to estimate the association between day-to-day changes in PM and day-to-day changes in cardiovascular admission rate. One of the challenges is that we need to adjust for confounding. So we need to adjust for variation that underlying the two time series that could provide bias, that could bias the association. One potential confounder that is hard to deal with is the seasonality. So if you look at this smoother curve, you know that you can notice that the number of cardiovascular admissions have some seasonal behavior. They tend to be higher in the winter and lower in the summer. And also particulate matter tends to have some seasonality. So you need to remove the seasonality from the time series in order to estimate the association that hopefully is better adjusted by confounding. Now, one of the biggest challenges that we have, so I would call it pre-filtering. You filter the time series and then you estimate the residual association. The biggest challenge that has been up to, for most of the air pollution epidemiology is that how much filtering you do. You don't know exactly whether you should fit the smoother curve or the less smooth curve or the very rough curve. And so one way to do it is actually do a very careful sensitivity analysis. And this basically estimates the association between air pollution and cardiovascular disease by increasing the number of degrees of freedom in the smoke curve. And so as you go from the top to the bottom, you are reducing more and more and more information in the data until actually you will not be able to estimate anything. And I think it's pretty reasonable to consider a degree of adjustment, especially for seasonality, around, from 1 to 5 degrees of freedom per year. So we provide a strong evidence of the national average effect of a fine particulate matter and the coarse particulate matter. One of the biggest policy questions until 5 years ago was whether or not, in addition to regulate PM2.5, we should also regulate cohorts PM. So just as a way of background, PM2.5 is particulate matter of a diameter less than 2.5 micron, and it was pretty well accepted they are harmful to human health. What was less certain is whether also coarse PM was harmful, and coarse are a little bit larger particulate matter. Their size goes between 2.5 and 10. And so by combining the information and this multi-site time series study where we constructed time series data for 700 locations in the United States and then pooling information across cities, we were able to provide strong evidence that PM2.5, even when it's adjusted by cohorts, increase the hospital admission rate for cardiovascular disease when, on the other hand, the effect of coarse PM was less strong. Actually, in this case, we didn't find any association. So I'm just going to basically quickly go through this and say that a nice example that where statisticians and epidemiologists have really contributed in terms of air policies was really in the context of air pollution and health, and that's an example where, for example, the criteria document in 1996, they raised a lot of questions about whether or not time series epidemiology study they have been difficult to interpret because of the methodological statistical weaknesses, where now, more recently, I think thanks to the work of many, many people around, that have been really convinced that careful and rigorous statistical methodology can actually address important policy questions. I'm going to skip this. So what I want to talk about, I also want to mention a little bit, and this is in the U.S. too, I want to talk a little bit about extreme heat and climate change. So I just want to give you some, this is just an interesting plot. There is not much more I want to say about that, but I wanted to show. So one of the things that I want to talk about is how we estimate health effects associated with extreme heat, with high temperature and heat waves. And so this is the, I found this plot interesting because this is show the daily time series for Cook County, so during many summers. And this is the temperature, these are the temperature time series plot, and the black curve is the temperature time series plot during the summer 1999, which was really this horrible heat wave, which actually was associated with a significant number of deaths. And these are the days where correspond to a heat wave. So these are days where, as you can see, they have a very high temperature, much higher than the percentile. And also, what I plot on top was the number of heat stroke emissions. And so you could really see the tremendous amount of signal. I mean, the reason why I like this plot is because I worked for 10 years in air pollution research, and you never see an association clear. And we always have to really figure out how to find the needle in the haystack. In this context where you're dealing with health effects of heat, it's pretty clear that in the case of heat stroke, you can really see the jump in the number of hospital admission for heat stroke during the heat wave. So there is really not a general definition of what is a heat wave. Different papers give you different definitions. But the idea is that you are on a heat wave. I mean, you know, we all know. You're on a heat wave when it's hot, and when yesterday has been very hot, and when it's hot compared to where generally the temperature that you are used to. So in Boston, if you have 90 Fahrenheit, it's, you know, it's pretty hot, which may be 90 Fahrenheit in other places in southern might be less, you know, much more tolerable. So what we decided to do is that we wanted to develop statistical model, and I call it that for present-day risk, because I want to develop a statistical model that estimates the health effect associated with heat waves using present data, what I mean the last 10 years of data. And then I want to use this model to predict what's going to be the future number of deaths or hospital admission associated with climate change prediction of the number of extra heat waves that we're going to see in the future. So the model is pretty simple in terms that, at least as I'm presenting here, is the log of expected number of deaths of hospital admission. I'm using a general function of weather, which is basically could be current day and interaction of the temperature today and previous temperature in the previous day. And actually what we do with this, we use, I call Bayesian model averaging, in terms that I specify different forms of what can be the exposure to heat, and I let my data to tell me which of these exposure to heat is more harmful to human health, and then I adjust for pollution and season, and then I estimate a relative risk from this model, which is the ratio of the average number of deaths on a heat wave days divided by the average number of deaths on all heat wave days. So I want to spend a little bit of time on the figures. So this is what I do. I take data from the 105 cities in the United States. These are geographically clustered in different geographical regions in the U.S., industrial Midwest, Northeast, Northwest, and so on. And then within each city, I have this time series data, and I estimate using this Poisson model and Bayesian model averaging the excess number of deaths on heat waves compared to the excess number of deaths on non-heat waves adjusted for all the other confounders. And you can see, not surprising, there is a variation across cities. The reason why I have this is because I use the Bayesian model averaging. Sometimes the estimates of the relative risk could be multimodal, and so I use it's shaded where it's dark, where most of the posterior mass is concentrated. So there is quite a variation, as has always been confirmed by other studies. The effect tends to be larger in the northeast part of the United States. This is Baltimore, this is Chicago, and there is a much less effect in the southeast. So the next question is really, how can we figure it out? What are the community characteristics that explain this variation? Is that because people are adapting more to the heat? Is it because there's a better use of air conditioning? Because people are less exposed? What are the factors that drive this variation? So what is the future? How much time I have? 5 minutes, perfect. So what we want to do in the future, so while the present-day health effects of temperature have been fairly well characterized, one thing that we don't know is the extent to which future changes in heat wave distribution will affect human health. So we have built a model that allows us to estimate risk of mortality or hospitalization associated with heat waves events for different cities in the United States. And now what I'm trying to do is say, okay, assuming that I can rely on prediction of the number of heat waves that are going to happen in the next century, and through many of the work from climate change, we have that prediction, how we're going to predict the public health impact. I think what I was mostly interested in was not exactly to say in the year 2100 in Chicago we're going to have extra number of deaths. What I was most interesting is where the most of the statistical variation is coming. It's because of the different climate models. Are the climate models giving us consistent prediction of heat? Is because of the climate change scenario. So what were really the sources of variation when I want to do a prediction of the future public health impact? So that is just the general framework, right? So for one city, just to make a sample, for one city, for the city of Chicago, I show you that we can take data from the health, from environmental condition, we can develop more or less sensitive statistical model, and I can give you an estimate and a confidence interval of number of deaths associated with Chicago, with a heat wave event in Chicago. Then we take global climate model prediction from experts. They have a different prediction, they do spatial downscaling. Bottom line is they give you a prediction of the number of future heat waves that you expect to see in the city of Chicago under different emission scenarios. Then we're going to make assumptions, and we're going to test assumptions about the population growth, the mortality rate, and the adaptation with the ultimate goal of estimating and coming up with the future heat wave excess mortality. So this is just to give you an idea of how that works. So this is a plot that shows the annual excess mortality attributable to heat wave events during the period 2081-2100. So this is the number of, basically each of these is a point estimate of the number of extra deaths. And there are under three different scenarios. This is the most aggressive scenario in terms of that we don't do anything and continue to pollute as much as we are doing, even more. And these are two alternative scenarios. These are the classical scenarios that are used in every of these IPCC report for climate change. The interesting thing that within each of these scenarios, there are seven estimates, because these seven estimates correspond to seven different predictions from global climate model of the number of extra heat waves events that we're expected to see in the future. And so the bottom line is, this was the number of deaths that we see in the 99 heat waves, and this was the number of deaths that we see in 95 heat waves. So there are two messages I want to say. One is we're expecting that the number of heat waves and the number of excessive deaths are going to be higher than what we are seeing, even the most dramatic condition, across all the scenarios. And second of all, the most important source of variation is not much the statistical variation around the risk, but it's really still the inconsistency across the different climate models of the predicted number of heat waves that we're going to see in the future. So I'm just going to conclude with one graph. Is well, how we're going to put all this together, and that is really the part that I'm more excited about in terms of future work. Because what I told you about in this talk, I told you how statistical modeling and epidemiology can inform you on the health effects of air pollution. And then I told you about how we can estimate health effects associated with climate change and how can we predict the future health impact of climate change. Of course, these two things go together and one informs the other. And you can actually build at least a conceptual framework where you think about the climate change is not only affecting temperature, as we all know, but it's affecting pollution as well. And these are really interacting phenomena, which are all going to affect human health. And so the idea is really moving forward, is try to think about, under different emission scenario, how we're going to affect not only climate, but also pollution, and also accounting for the fact that we are not exposed only to weather or only to pollution, but we are exposed to both things simultaneously. So I'm going to conclude. What is known is that air pollution, even at lower levels, is still affecting human health. Climate change threatens public health by affecting several environmental stressors jointly. Most of the work is looking at one stressor at a time. We are now moving away from that. And air pollution, especially ozone, is likely to be affected. What is not known is that there is a resilience and vulnerability to changing exposure in some population. I skipped the plot, but actually we saw that on average for the entire United States, actually I can show it to you, on average for the entire United States, the number of excess death associated with with extreme temperature is going down over time. And so why it's going down over time? It's because of air conditioning, because we are adapting. We don't really know what is measuring, what is the factor behind a lower effect of heat on human health. And so we clearly have to think about a joint framework, because there might be some policy that targets PM, particular matter of ozone, that could actually prevent the excess number of deaths from another pollutant and vice versa. So I want to thank both my funding sources, and particularly Michelle Bell, Roger Peng, and Jennifer Bob. They've been really collaborators and driving a lot of this work. Thank you.